The Jays score runs for him. He comes out, he throws 5, 7, and 9 pitches to get the Yankees for the next three innings.
They didn't get another base runner. Yes, I do not think that Drew Storen is Sergio Santos.
For so many reasons. If I went to a cricket game, I'd be on the phone constantly trying to figure out how long the thing lasted. And welcome once again to Artificial Turf Wars, Episode 7, where every throw we make is on the run. I am Greg Wisniewski, and I am joined tonight by my good friend Josh Howsam. How you doing tonight, Josh?
I'm good. How about you?
Good, good. We've had a pretty full week. We had 6 games, so we've got starting pitching to talk about. We have 2 batters who are on fire, 1 roster move, and then while everybody's humming and hawing over whether they're really doing good this season, we grab some other statistics to talk about that maybe indicate it's too early to make a big determination about the season. The Rogers folks, or the Blue Jays people, fired a very popular Twitter presence. We'll talk about him. We have a couple of questions. We have a do-over that I must say is tailor-made for our do-over format. And then we have some kind of digressions and final thoughts. I think that should take us to the end. So 3-3 is not a bad week.
No, especially when you're playing the Red Sox and the Yankees.
Yeah, you're keeping your head above water in the division. It did start a little rough with this habit that started in Tampa of giving up runs late and then forgetting that you were also allowed to score them.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a trend. It was 4 games in a row.
Yeah,
the Jays blew.
Yep,
three. It was bad.
You got guys coming by the end. They didn't even give Cecil a lead to blow. They just put him in a tie game. Like you're gonna let one score anyway. Why have a lead when you do it? He came through, not in a good way. But, of course, you wouldn't have a lead in the late innings if it weren't for the performance of this rotation, which was something people were super scared of and bring up a lot. And they've been the exact opposite of unreliable and weird. They've been very solid.
Yeah, they really have. I mean, you know, R.A. Dickey has been not very good, but that's kind of a thing with him. He's just not good in April. I don't know if it's the weather or if he just needs a longer spring, but he's been bad in April for 3 years in a row and he turns it on around June. But I mean, Happ has been, he looks like how he looked in Pittsburgh. You know, he'll only throw 6 innings to start. He just doesn't have the ability to do more than that because he throws a lot of pitches, but he's given up 2 runs in each start, right?
And when you're looking at your number 4 or 5 starter, whatever you want to call him, but you're looking at the back end of the rotation, that's what you're asking for.
Give me six
innings to get to the bullpen and try not to bury us while you're getting to the 6 innings. 2 runs is fantastic.
Yeah, and actually, I was wrong. It was 1 run in the last game against the Yankees.
Yeah, he gave up 10 base runners, though. 7.
Yeah, that's what he does.
Right, but you look at that and you go, well, that's probably not going to result in 1 run all the time, but you have a way about you of managing to get that done, so I'm not going to argue with that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the way it is. He wasn't giving up hard hit balls. He wasn't giving up doubles and triples and things like that. You know, a bunch of singles. I think he gave up 1 double. If you pitch that way, you're usually going to win.
Yeah, you just got to space it out well enough. And like you said, keep the slugging percentage down. And you know, sometimes you give in with a walk instead of giving in by parking one down the middle of the plate. Now, that's Jay Happ, who we weren't expecting to be good. Marco Estrada has had 1 start. He was fantastic.
Swoon.
Marco Estrada. They didn't really start popping up the ball until the later part of his start.
He was striking everybody out in the first few innings.
It's weird. Which actually costs Marco Estrada a little bit, because it's the same thing with him and Happ. It makes it tougher for him to get late in the innings if they aren't offering up at things. Boston is a patient team, especially compared to Tampa, who is just, they're a bunch of hackers apparently, from the looks of them. But that contrast I found was huge between those two series.
Yeah, I mean, Estrada only gave up 7 base runners in his 7 innings. If he hadn't, you know, if he'd given up a couple more hits, or if they hadn't thrown that guy out at the plate on that amazing relay by Ryan Goins, his pitch count might have gotten a lot higher, as you said. Just because, you know, when you're striking guys out, your pitch count goes up.
Yeah, which is how Blue Jays have elevated the pitch count of many of the starters they faced.
That's true.
Not to great effect, always. That was a weird trend. We didn't actually put that in the notes, but that was really... I mean, I don't know if they're going to do that all year long, but that first inning pitch count was insane.
Every start.
Yeah. It was never below 10, and it was quite often over 25.
Yeah, and they were just struggling to get the runs home. They'd work 3-2 count, 3-2 count, 2 walks, 2 guys on, and then a strikeout and a ground out, and the inning would be over. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you can continually do that, and these hitters have shown that they can, then that eventually the runs are going to start piling up in bunches early in games, and the Jays are going to see a lot of bullpens early.
And I think the other thing you see when that happens is as a pitcher goes through that many pitches, he has to go to his secondary stuff in the first or second inning. He mm-hmm. can't just throw fastballs because they're going to be all over the fastball. So you you advance that process of making him use up or show a pattern earlier. And again, I think that I was expecting that to work out better for them. I think in the long run, that could work out better for them, or should.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's funny that we were talking about starting pitching. We haven't even gotten to the two guys who most people gush over.
We started to gush over
last podcast. Yeah,
who was in charge of the order? Well, okay, we'll save the best for last, I guess. So we'll go with Aaron Sanchez. Is that
I thought
fair?
You said you were saving the best for last.
I knew you were going to say that.
I'm nothing if not predictable, I guess. Here's the thing about Sanchez in this start. He wasn't his best. You know, he threw 54 strikes to 43 balls. He did not get a lot of help from the home plate umpire. I looked on Brooks, and there were 9 pitches that should have been called strikes that were not.
It was an oval strike zone. Like, you could have an ovoid thing up. There needs to be a corner on it somewhere. Maybe not 4 of them.
It was insanely bad, but it was bad for both teams.
True.
But here's what impressed me about this Sanchez start. He did not have his best stuff. His command was shaky. His fastball was slower than last time by about almost 1.25 miles per hour on average. He couldn't really throw his changeup, and he still dominated the Yankees, a team that is loaded with left-handed hitters, which have traditionally given him a lot of trouble.
Which is fantastic.
I mean, to me, this was a more encouraging start for my belief that he can be in the rotation long-term than the one where he dominated the Rays, just because, as you mentioned, the Rays will swing at everything, and against a guy with command issues, that doesn't really tell you a whole lot.
No. I've noticed that he has cured his leave the breaking ball up and don't finish it problems.
That he has. He's bouncing a few too many.
Yeah, he's a young guy still. He's still hunting for that happy middle ground where you can park that down around the ankles and not have Russ Martin get all beat up by it on a regular basis. But when he makes a mistake now, it costs him a ball. Before, it would cost him maybe an extra base hit or a home run.
So, exactly. Which is, I mean, it's a huge difference.
And that reinforces the whole ground ball tendency as well. It's great to see.
Yeah, in that game against the Yankees, he got ground balls on 62.5% of balls in play.
We're going to talk about ground balls for somebody else in a minute.
Oh, are we now?
Yeah.
Would you like to do that now?
Okay, we'll go over to that. So Marcus Stroman's had 2 starts since. The first start was clearly not where he wanted to be at. He was having command problems against Boston. And he did the classic pitcher, like, kick the mound around for a while, like it's the mound's fault. which I'm sure sometimes, yes, your landing spot isn't quite the same, but other times I think there's other stuff going on. So he was not great against Boston, but did not most of those runs come, you know, after he left the game?
Yeah, I mean, when you leave with the bases loaded, you probably don't expect all of them to score, especially when there are 2 outs. They scored pretty fast.
Yeah, well, they got that the tension was relieved in not the best way.
no kidding. But in that inning, I mean, he came out and he walked 2 batters with a 7-2 lead in the 6th inning, and you just can't do that.
No. No. So that was the downside of Marcus Stroman. Tonight, we are recording Thursday. He finished a ruthlessly efficient 3-hit, 8-inning, two-run game. The two runs were garbage. If you could ever point at two runs and go, one of them was his fault because it was a wild pitch. But he got 4 grounders in the inning, and he gave up one soft flyer to Mark Teixeira, and he hit a batter just his uniform. A-Rod didn't even twitch. It just flicked his uniform right about belt level with a changeup. So all of these things come together, and then Ryan Goins has a ball in his glove and can't find the ball. It was just brutal. So I know that happens in baseball, but there's nothing Marcus Stroman can do to be any better in that inning except the wild pitch.
I was going to ask if the flyer was on a clutter or a slutter.
Maybe. I think the problem is you mispronounce one of those things, and then we have to bring out the beep machine again.
Darn it.
So
can I get a do-over?
I'd give you a do-over for sure. What do you think? Did you look at Marcus Stroman's ground ball percentage for this start?
Yeah. So Marcus Stroman pitched 8 innings. It means he got 24 outs. Of those 24, 17 were on the ground and 2 were fly balls.
73.9% ground ball percentage, including the quote unquote base hit to Ryan Goins, et cetera, et cetera. 74% ground ball rate is just stupid.
It's insane. I mean, the pitcher shouldn't be doing that. Especially against a team like the Yankees. I mean, yeah, you've got guys like Ellsbury, Gregorius, Castro, who are all ground ball guys, but A-Rod, Teixeira, McCann, Beltran, even Headley, they're all mostly fly ball hitters.
The other thing I pulled up was the interesting, now I am not a fan of the shutdown inning as a, like, you're always trying to shut down the opposition.
Yes, we've cliched that before. To death,
but, no, that is not the, I hate it when I don't have windows that I thought I had open. You ever do that? No, you're always fine with that stuff.
Clearly, I'm the more professional of the two of us here.
Absolutely.
With my
he had
sludders.
The rough fourth inning. The rough fourth inning was 34 pitches. The first 3 innings, he had thrown 35 total.
Wow.
So
that's rather efficient.
Yeah. So, well, you're like, oh, crap, I just blew my game out of the water with one bad inning that just wouldn't end. And then he threw a 16-pitch inning, which is okay. So he's getting up there. The Jays score runs for him. He comes out, he throws 5, 7, and 9 pitches to get the Yankees for the next 3 innings.
They didn't get another base runner.
No. But he caught up to his pitch count. He had 85 pitches after 5, and he threw 106 and finished 8 innings. This guy, I like a guy who can just turn it up. And his Marcus Stroman goes to 11.
He really does. I mean, of all the people that you can actually think that that's a thing that happens, it's got to be him, right?
Yep.
I mean, he just gets so amped up, and you can really see that emotions sort of guide him on the mound.
Yeah, and he wears it on his sleeve, and it works. If it didn't work, if he was like Kyle Drabek yakking at himself around the mound and then still walking the planet, I wouldn't be impressed. But but I'm impressed, duly.
So we've kind of gone over the rotation, right?
Yeah, I think we covered the rotation.
Did you see who was warming up in that fourth inning if it had gotten away from Stroman?
Not Ryan Tepera.
Darn right. Pat Finnitty.
That was an interesting move. I guess that was saying, now, what is that saying as a manager? Is that saying, I don't want you throwing 40 pitches in this inning and I'm just going to have to come get you?
Well, I think part of it was just he was having some command issues in that inning, right?
Yeah.
And the bases were loaded. A run was already in. 2 runs were already in, actually. And so you just, if the game starts to look like it's going to get away, you got to come in and stop it.
Right.
And it's just Stroman, you know, he shut it down, and then Diddy sat back down. But, you know, it's you have to have a guy ready there, right?
Yeah, no, that's fair. I just it was interesting to see. Well, first of all, Venditti up, and it was interesting to see someone up for Stroman in the fourth inning. We haven't seen that since, I think, before he had his injury. I guess it was just so out of character. It was like, whoa, Stroman can get pulled early. Okay, I guess that's still true. You know, he's human. All right.
I want to talk about Pat Venditti, Greg.
Okay, Pat Venditti wears 44. I think the one of the fours should be backwards on his uniform. It just seems
I think
right
he should have
me.
A wheel instead for his number so he can flip them around.
Yeah, then he'd have to have a number that was 88. I know pitchers don't wear high numbers voluntarily, but 88 would be great because you could do anything with it. You turn it, you know, upside down, backwards, still 88. Are you you're very happy to see this enigma in the big leagues and doing okay?
Yeah, we joke around about, oh, it's fun to have the switch pitcher, but I actually think he could be a really useful weapon. Now, Franklin Morales is on the DL with arm tiredness. They didn't actually say what was wrong with him. He just couldn't warm up. But Venditti can get righties and lefties out with pretty good efficiency, and that's a really useful weapon, especially in the American League East, where there's all these left-handed bats, but enough right-handed thumpers in the middle of them that it can cause you problems.
And Schulman had lots of fun with it last night. He's like, there are two pitchers warming up in the Blue Jays bullpen right now, and both of them are named Pat Venditti.
I had a good laugh at that.
Also, he was trying to note, tonight they cut to the bullpen, he goes, and Venditti is warming up as a right-hander. And Venditti switches and starts with the other arm. Like, or as a left-hander.
I just love that there's a guy that changed the rules of baseball or had a rule written about him, and he's on the Blue Jays.
Yeah, that's...
It's just fun.
Baseball is supposed to be not predictable, and if anything is not predictable, Pat Venditti fits all of those descriptions. Now, in order to win baseball games, of course, not only do you have to pitch well, you have to hit the baseball. And really, there are two guys hitting the baseball on this team. Well, okay, maybe we give Michael Saunders a point.
Yeah, he's been doing well.
But considering the pedigree of this lineup, it's really sitting on the shoulders of two guys who are on fire.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those two guys tend to be on fire. Josh Donaldson and Jose Bautista.
Jose Bautista has had exactly a 500 OBP for, I believe, four games in a row.
Yep. That's just consistency, folks.
Keep it nice and steady. That means, this is the other part that is just crazy to me. That means that 50% of the time, literally half of the time, when Donaldson and, when Encarnacion and Tulowitzki come up, they look, and Jose Bautista is standing on base.
Yeah.
That would be so weird. As Encarnacion, just looking at him going, oh, he's there again.
It's like, when was the last time Encarnacion batted when a pitcher was pitching from the full?
Yeah. It's like, oh, again? He's so consistent. So that's crazy. But he hasn't been the one actually hitting, per se. He had the two home run night, which was cool. But the hitter in the club is Josh Donaldson, who hit his fifth home run tonight.
And it was a bomb. Nathan Eovaldi decided, I'm going to throw a 90-mile-an-hour splitter that doesn't split and just stays over the middle of the plate to Josh Donaldson. Not usually a good idea.
And he did not miss it. No, so no, important that not. You don't miss it.
Which has actually been happening to a lot of the Jays hitters in this season so far. They've just been missing floaters down the middle. Donaldson has not been.
No. And Martin comes to mind immediately. That there was that hanger on that double play the other night where they started Saunders.
The strike him out, throw him out.
Yeah, the strike him out, throw him out. And the pitch he missed, I was like, could it be any slower and more hanging?
Yeah,
and
hanging curveball. Like,
woof. I was like, oh, man. Okay, just take a step back. I'm sure we'll hear about some early batting practice or some special session or something that Russell Martin took and it'll all start to get better. Yeah.
But anyway, people were worried about a step back from Donaldson. They probably don't have to be.
No, he seems to have zoned in on where he needs to be. Now, he came out, of course, before the game tonight. He's not really pleased with where his swing's at.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah. The guy's hitting 325 with a 775 slugging percentage and 5 home runs in 10 games. Not pleased. No, no. Got to do better.
Not where he wants to be. I also would like to give a vote of confidence for Jacoby Ellsbury trying to save Nathan Eovaldi's feelings on that home run, because he pursued it as though he was going to make some sort of play on it. It landed in the second row of the flight deck.
Yeah. It was gone. I mean, Donaldson didn't even move after he hit it. He just stared at it because it was that big.
It was 30 feet over Ellsbury's head. And he's trying to figure out how to play it off.
30? It was 70 feet over his head.
But how do you play it off the facing? It's like, oh, if it bounces right, I'll catch it and throw it in.
It was impressive.
So, yeah, I guess that was just to make Eovaldi feel like he hadn't given up a monster shot. Now, we go on about how good or not good the Jays are on the offensive side of the ball. We make some conclusions. I think there are a lot of conclusions that even you and I are making that are probably premature.
Not probably.
Okay, that are premature. They tell us a lot about the last 10 games. They tell us nothing about how the rest of the season is going to go. And we see this on Twitter, and we get comments from people and see people panicking. Here are some things that have happened so far in the season. We grab them not from the Blue Jays, because you're all familiar with Russell Martin's horrible batting average or Marcus Stroman's incredible performances. You go first with the one you found about the Orioles.
Yeah, so people might have noticed the Orioles started out the season kind of well. They went 7-0 in their first 7 games.
Now that sounds like a very good team.
It does. Sounds like everything's clicking on all cylinders, right?
Yes.
Yeah. In those games, their starting pitcher averaged under 5 innings per start.
Well, okay. So, yeah, that'll work for another 100 games, 150 games or so.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you can keep winning games with your starter going 4 1/3.
You call up more pitcher people.
Silly small sample goodness.
You remember the Mets?
Yes, they went to the World Series.
Yes, and were defeated by the Kansas City Royals, but not embarrassingly so. They just couldn't keep that ninth inning down. The Mets this season, who signed Yoenis Cespedes, who is a power threat, I think you would agree.
I think everybody would agree.
Absolutely. The Mets have 2 home runs. That's the whole team in 10 games. So that projects for them over the season to have...
Not a lot of home runs.
Not enough.
We don't like doing projections here.
No. Now, Trevor Story, of course, everybody knows, has 7 home runs. You grab that one. He has, as of Monday, he had as many homers as the Mets, Pirates, Marlins, and Angels together.
And on those teams included are Mike Trout, Giancarlo Stanton, Andrew McCutchen. And, as you mentioned, Cespedes. Some guys that can hit the ball out of the park.
And Pujols. And on and on it goes. Something's got to give, folks. Time will tell. There is one more. We had our top 5 on-base plus slugging leaders. So up to the 10-game point, obviously, we're going to hear Miguel Cabrera's name. We're going to hear Mike Trout. We're going to hear Bryce Harper. So you give me the top 5.
Okay. There are Jeremy Hazelbaker, Daniel Murphy, Dexter Fowler, Trevor White, and Trevor Story. Tyler White.
One of the Whites.
Yeah.
I don't think you touched on anyone I'm familiar with. I know who Daniel Murphy is. I've never heard of Hazel Baker.
Yeah, he hasn't appeared on even any top 10 team prospect lists.
But we're into the season. Here we go. It's all been foretold.
Yeah. So lesson, early season stats mean nothing.
but Trevor Story is a very cool story. I mean, no pun intended. That's really neat. And it also pretty much ensures that Jose Reyes will never see another game in a Colorado Rockies uniform again.
Oh, yeah. 100%. And so, just folks, just when you look at Russell Martin being dead last in baseball and on base percentage, he's going to stay there.
He's chasing Jeremy Hazelbaker. Whoever that is.
Hey, but just don't tell this to Cardinals fans, because they're convinced they have the next Miguel Cabrera or something like that.
Oh my goodness. So we'll move out of statistics to Rogers / the Blue Jays parting ways with Stephen R. Brooks. If you're on Twitter, you would probably know him as the guy who took pictures of all of the stuff going on with the new turf and tweeting it out and then answering a lot of questions for fans.
That's how most people know him.
Kind of a weird one that it was just like, boom, he's parting ways. He was fired, and then it was he resigned. What do you make of it?
Well, and the most thing I make about it is just that something he wanted to be doing or he liked did not work with what Mark Shapiro sees from his head of the business department of the team. Apparently, during the pick talks, he mentioned he doesn't like how the Jays handle their ticketing, which is very much under Brooks' purview. And the guy he brought in from Cleveland, Andrew Miller. No, not that Andrew Miller. Oh, that would have been nice.
I've retired to go into VP operations of a baseball.
I'm not tired of being too good at baseball. I want to try my hand at something new.
Not quite. Okay.
Anyway, that guy oversaw the stadium renovations that were done at Progressive Field, and you know, that's kind of something that needs to happen in here. So it from a business side, there's some understanding of why something like that would happen. But from an emotional side, people know Brooks, so it was very weird for them to see him go. He's actually scheduled for a pitch talks or something like that next week. I don't think that's going to happen now.
Well, if he's a quote-unquote free agent, maybe it's going to happen. He's going to spill the beans. Get your tickets.
Yeah. Hey, if he's still there, I think you should.
Yeah, you might learn something even between whatever the talks are. Though you're right. He probably is going to gracefully bow out.
But the thing that's come out of all this is this notion of the destruction of the Canadian Blue Jays and making them the Americanized team because they've gotten rid of Beeston, Anthopoulos, and Brooks, all of whom were Canadians, and replaced them all with Americans.
Do you know what I say to that?
Why are you mentioning this to me? Because it's the silliest thing ever?
I'm just going to go, mwah. But
then I have to act like one of the people on Charlie Brown and figure out what you're trying to say.
Here's the thing. Those people were not hired because they were Canadian. They were hired because they were people who were likely already known to Paul Beeston or someone else in charge who happened to be Canadian and know them because they were Canadian. But they weren't hired in an effort to keep the team Canadian. Baseball is hire your buddy business. And if you really want to get down to it, were we really, really excited that the most Canadian team in baseball was the Brewers? Like, were we thrilled about that? Was this like, did we all become Brewers fans because they have like a half Canadian front office? No, nobody cared. And nobody should care.
What you're trying to say is that we all should become Brewers fans and stop following the Blue Jays, right?
I think you may have misinterpreted some of the things I just said.
Damn. I was trying.
Yeah. There's my take. It's nonsense.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. We promised to answer questions, didn't we?
Yeah, we don't have many. We got a couple, but they're ones that have some depth to them. So I think we should limit to them, you know, not talk about the silly stuff.
Okay, so question number one, I will let you give it to me.
Okay, this comes from Olerud's Helmet, at Olerud's Helmet. Is it too early to talk about moving Kevin Pillar off the leadoff spot?
Well, that's an interesting question because, of course, I think Josh and I are united in the idea that he should never have been there in the first place.
Yes, we definitely are.
Okay, but if you accept the idea that he's there, I would say nothing has happened yet to cause you to move him off the leadoff spot. Because if you put him there to try and drive the ball, run the bases quickly and or sort of well, and do whatever it is you thought he was going to do, Kevin Pillar has been pretty much as advertised.
Yeah, I mean, he has no walks. But, you know, that's what Kevin Pillar does.
Do not or doesn't make fun. Do. He has an allergy. He could have a serious reaction if he took a walk just without preparing himself first and taking medication of some kind.
He needs an EpiPen if he takes a walk?
Exactly. And then he'd run really fast if you've ever seen anybody who's just taking an EpiPen.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, like we were not believing he should be in the leadoff spot to begin with. So it's hard for us to say that he, you know, it's for us, it's too late. But as you mentioned, I mean, there's just nothing now. There's no reason to change it now.
Yep. Like,
you know, he's not hitting either, which is a problem, but give it a couple more games and see what happens. Essentially, is the answer.
Yeah. I mean, if he falls in an 0 for 20 and he doesn't start getting hit by pitches, which also he seems to be allergic to, he seems to think the only way to...
No, he swings at the ones that are going to... That's how he tries to save himself, is to swing at them and knock the ball away or something.
I've noticed this tendency as well. So yeah, if somehow he figures out, if he doesn't figure out how to get on base and he goes 0 for 20 and Ryan Goins catches fire and...
Or Michael Saunders.
Or Saunders. Yeah, I think you could see John Gibbons making that move. He might end up reversing the move later. I don't know. Yeah. All tough to tell how you get in John Gibbons' doghouse exactly. But once you get there, you tend to stay there for a long time.
I want to note before we move off Pilar, just something that came up. He apparently played September with a broken hand.
I heard that on the broadcast and I thought, how broken was it?
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of bones in the hand. I'm assuming he just cracked one of them, but that's still crazy.
Yeah. Because most of the time, a hand injury is the death of the hitter for obvious reasons.
Yeah, and it was his throwing hand, which is actually better for the hitter, but not when you're throwing in the outfield.
Weird. So I'm sure more details to come on that. About how he was able to play through it, I think was what something they were going to cover post game, but I didn't catch it. So
yeah, he's actually apparently doing that as we record with Mike Wilner.
So yeah, we'll keep you posted, possibly on Baseball Prospectus Toronto, depending on how in depth they get.
Ooh, good teaser.
We have another question from Mike at GoSensGo101. Hi Mike, how you doing? Mike's one of the few people I'm like, could we have him call it? No, it's not live. Mike's been on Twitter forever. Early thoughts on Drew Storen.
Do you want to start this one?
No, you go ahead. I had the first crack at Kevin Pillar.
Here's the thing that's notable about Drew Storen so far this season. I mean, the numbers, I don't, as we've established, they mean nothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys have good games, bad games. Brett Cecil had 38 scoreless innings out appearances in a row, and they gave up runs in 3 out of 4. But the interesting thing with Storen is that his velocity is way down right now. Well, not way. It's about 2.5 miles an hour down from where it usually is.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. It's early, and a lot of guys build velocity as the season goes. He has had a couple Aprils where he's down, but not this far down. So he's still throwing 92, 93 miles an hour, but he's a guy that normally lives in the 94 to 96, 97 range.
Odd.
Yes, a little bit odd. So it will be interesting to see where this goes. I think that's something that we should be monitoring as the month progresses. If he doesn't start picking it up a bit, I think we should be worried.
Yeah, I think as we see him a little bit more, we'll get to see whether the slider is still as effective a weapon when paired up with just a 92 mile an hour fastball, if that's where it's at, as compared to that 94, 95. Because that's, right, that's part of the adjustment. Maybe hitters don't have to worry about so much anymore. And the slider is where he lives and breathes.
Yeah, he's got a wicked slider. So yeah, you're right. If they can just wait back on it, it might become less effective.
We had another guy with a fantastic slider who just never worked out. You remember him?
Yes, I do not think that Drew Storen is Sergio Santos.
For so many reasons. Would we probably still be talking about this even if he hadn't given up the home run the other night, because that home run was literally a foot fair. So I think that I don't think it's we're down on him because of that. Like you said, the numbers aren't really necessarily what means what.
Yeah.
We only have the two questions. Correct?
That's it.
Nothing popped in. Sometimes things pop in while we're recording and I get all flustered and
yeah, I don't know what to screw do. Them. If someone comes in too late, too bad. You missed your chance.
Oh, he's laying down the law now. Oh my goodness. So we have a couple of what we have a do-over. that said was absolutely
tailor-made
for the do-over format.
His best pitch is probably a slider that he will use, especially when he has, what did you call it, the switch advantage?
The platoon advantage,
platoon
I guess.
Platoon advantage.
I'm just making it up on the fly.
I like it. I'm going with it. And he'll.
So you found that tidbit somehow, Josh.
Yeah, this was during Venditti's appearance in the ninth inning when he pitched against the Yankees on Wednesday's game. I had to go back and pull that because, my God. How long has Tyler been doing this? How does he not know what a platoon advantage is?
I don't know. And how did Schulman keep his straight face?
He's a pro, clearly.
It's like, you've never heard of the... Okay, you know what a platoon is. Have you heard of those? Like, I don't know how you actually go that far. So, I mean, I guess... Your take on that was that the response should have been something like this.
Not the best color man in the league for nothing, folks.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
My God. We harp on Buck and Pat a lot because they say a lot of silly things. That was just insane.
You ever had a friend where you're talking to them and then you find out that they don't know that scallops come from a seashell? And you're like, well, what did you think they came from? Or just some weird thing that you thought everybody knew? That's what this is. It's like, did nobody ever explain it to Tabler in those words because they all just assumed he knew?
But here's what I don't understand. How could you be around the game and like calling games for years and not just hear somebody say it
and think
the managers better talk about it? Does he not listen to the manager interviews?
I better ask what that means. I don't know. Obviously it went a long time. Would you like to give him the do-over? Or would you like me?
Go for it. I'm baffled too much to try to do this.
Mr. Tabler, if you would like to come on the show and give us a very brief explanation of how you overlooked the term the platoon advantage for your entire baseball career and then the post-baseball broadcasting career, and tell us that you know what it means now, we'll never talk about this again. If we don't see you, we may mention your problems with the term platoon advantage in the future. Oh. The only other thing I can think is that he thought it was somehow special to Pat Venditti, but we were not even going to go there.
Yeah, but you're right. You should touch on this. We should give it also a gold star to Dan Schulman for trying to save Tabler there. Oh, yeah, I'm just making it up as I go along. He's probably in his head thinking, like, what have I gotten myself into?
Yeah. I would absolutely, I would endorse the gold star there. Schulman is great to listen to. I wish I sounded like Dan Schulman.
He also makes Buck better. Buck is trained as an analyst, and he's actually very good at that.
I've been saying that for years. I'm like, why would you give a guy the reins of a game who cannot keep track of the score, does not pay attention to base runners, ends up with so many marks on his scorecard he can't remember what happened two innings ago, and can't pronounce anybody's name? Don't give that guy just in case you didn't notice, that's Buck. don't give that guy the reins to the game. Let him talk about the funny thing that happened, the way he thought about the play that just unfolded, the strategy that he might take into defensively. Let him do that. He's really, really good at it, and he's funny when he has the room to do that. But if he's busy trying to keep track of all of the nuts and bolts of the game, Buck is much worse.
Yes.
That was our do-over. We were going to talk about... Oh, that picture that showed up on Twitter? Do we want to
want to discuss it?
Yeah. Okay. So someone decided, and it even ended up on Reddit, to take a picture of someone at the game who had up on their phone on Google a Google Answers stupid question, how long does a baseball game last? Now, that picture was taken apparently in the second inning of the game. And everyone was like, oh, this person doesn't know how long a baseball game lasts. They're in a baseball game. That's not very nice.
No, it's not.
In addition... I would ask you to imagine a few scenarios of your own. Let's assume you got invited by a friend to Australia. Cool?
I'd love that.
And that friend says, let's go to a game of Aussie rules football. Sure. You sit down, you look, there's two semicircular lines. There's poles at either end. There's guys killing one another. And you've been there 15 minutes and you have no clue what's going on.
If for the record, you could have described anything as being on the field and I would have believed you. Now, you could have basically described Aussie rules football as Quidditch and I would have thought, oh, yeah, okay, that's probably what it is.
So after 15 minutes, if your friend gets up to go get a drink, do you look it up on your phone?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. If I went to a cricket game, I'd be on the phone constantly trying to figure out how long the thing lasted. Well, imagine.
Because yeah, here's the thing. People have schedules, right?
Yep.
And they also have, you know, they have tolerance for how long they can sit through something they don't understand or don't necessarily like.
Exactly. And on top of that, if you walk into any of the other major four North American sports, what's the biggest thing right in the middle of the playing field or the largest thing displayed around the ribbon around the side that you can see?
The clock.
And you walk into a baseball stadium for maybe not your first time. There's no clock anywhere. It just tells you the time. Yeah.
Oh, so I feel sorry for the someone who looks up and in between, he's like, oh, good. There's only 2 hours left. It's like, wait, why is it counting? Oh, that's seconds. For this.
So I feel bad for the person that they weren't obviously enjoying the game, but I really don't hold it against them for trying to figure out what the heck was going on.
No. And just this reminded me of something that's kind of funny. Scott MacArthur, after today's game, tweet, the New York Yankees played a game that lasted only 2 hours and 22 minutes. Check for locusts.
How true. Oh, all right. So I'm going to do the little bit of housekeeping that we normally do now, because I did want to remember to say that we are on iTunes at Artificial Turf Wars. You can find us. Please take a moment, rate us on iTunes if you like what we do, because we do like to read those reviews, check in on if we're doing anything that's really driving people crazy or something that people really love. Also, on the flip side, it helps other people find the podcast if we have a lot of ratings. Cool, cool. All right. At the Twitter, we have a Twitter for the podcast. It's at TurfPod. You have a Twitter, which is at Joshua Housam. I have a Twitter at Coolhead2010. So if you're on Twitter, say hi. We love to get questions. And since the season started, we've actually got a few less questions.
Yeah, I would have thought there had been more people who are seeing things and having questions about them. We usually get, you know, 6 to 7 in the offseason. Now, nothing. So, hey, ask away and you'll get to hear some answers.
We do enjoy that part of the show. All right. So from there, we will go to some final thoughts. You have a final thought about the bullpen.
I do, yeah. On our last podcast, I think it was, you and I talked about the craziness of bringing in a long man when the team is, when their starter is going short, but there's a big rally happening.
The high leverage situation, yeah.
Right, exactly. And how it's like instead of going to their short reliever, they go to Joe Biagini or Arnold Leon, who's gone. Actually, we should mention that. He's been DFA'd.
Farewell.
But it turns out there's actually kind of a reason for it. When Brett Cecil spoke to Richard Griffin about this, and he had this to say, it's always nice to have a comfort level, know when you're going to pitch and where you're slotted to pitch. It makes guys more comfortable, especially in the game, knowing when to start getting ready. If you start getting ready too early, you kind of tire yourself out a little bit. When you don't know when you're going to go in, getting caught off guard when you haven't even stretched or anything yet. So it definitely gives a lot of comfort knowing where they're going to be slotted. In the game we were talking about, if Brett Cecil had been up and warming and getting hot, and then Stroman gets out of the game, out of the inning, there's a good chance he wouldn't be at his peak if he had to come in the eighth inning. Now he ended up blowing the game the next inning anyway, but it's a really good reason why they don't do it.
That is interesting to reflect on. Again, we get that very brief mental side of the game that we don't think about, especially when you're playing MLB 16, the show on your Xbox or whatever, and you just poke anybody in wherever you want.
Yeah, and these guys aren't chess pieces. They're people, and they get tired, and they have needs, and you got to sort of have to tend to them, which is the side of the manager's job we don't usually get to see.
And I think, I'm guessing John Gibbons is good at that side. That's why he gets to that reputation of being, quote, good with a bullpen, even when he does things that we think are funny from time to time.
Yeah.
Because he's being reviewed by his own employees. I have a final thought that is much more whimsical than that.
Okay.
You watch the broadcast. You know that they put up the pretend ads in the batter's eye on the field. Have you noticed the new one this year?
Not sure I have.
Avocados from Mexico.
Okay.
Seriously, it's a huge Avocados from Mexico logo. Now, okay, first of all, the first time I really noticed it was Roberto Osuna came in and they put up the ad. And I thought,
did they do it when Estrada was pitching too?
I don't know. It's just funny. It's like, okay, he's Mexican, so obviously that's the time to advertise our avocados. Second of all, I'm not sure what part of the target audience of a baseball game is going to be tuned in to avocados as a product they need to run out and buy after having watched said baseball game. And then thirdly, I don't get a choice of where my avocados come from when I go to the store.
It's actually a brand.
But yeah.
But here's the thing. You watched this, you saw it, and you did not realize it was a brand. You just go to your store and there's one set of avocados sitting in the basket, right?
Yeah. These are avocados. I buy avocados. I do not go to my... Can you imagine me going to the store manager? I'm sorry. I would like to purchase avocados here, but I'm afraid I would like avocados from Mexico brand avocados, and I don't see them. Like...
Yeah, weirdest it's kind ad. Of a silly one because most people, as you mentioned, shop for fruits and vegetables wherever yeah. they go, and then just whatever they have, that's what they take.
So I have no idea how much money they're spending, but wow, what a weird way to spend money. just crazy.
Hey, Jay's will take it.
So that's my final thought: is enjoy your avocados from Mexico, and I think it should be required that ad is up now that it's up when Roberto Osuna is pitching. Other than that, I don't know. Oh, all right. So that about wraps it up. That means that you have been Joshua Hausam and I have been Greg Wisniewski. And this has been Artificial Turf Wars Episode 7. And we'll talk to you again next week. I wonder if Avocados from Mexico has a theme song.
Avocados from Mexico.